Hi, everyone. I'm Jen, and I am a compulsive overeater. And this is the first time I've been a speaker for OA. I've done it in other 12-step program, but not this one. So bear with me. And my sponsor, I asked her, so what the heck do I do? And she said, tell them what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And so I can do that. I was born and raised in Fresno, California, to two very loving parents and an older brother. And I was premature. I was 6 weeks old when I was born, or 6 weeks premature, I should say. 6 weeks premature when I was born. And my dad used to call me Peanut. And I said, Dad, why do you call me Peanut? And he said, because that's what you looked like when you were born. He said, you know, I had no hair. You were a little tiny, scrawny little thing. And you looked just like a peanut. And I thought, well, that's cool. And our family doctor was this old country doctor out in Clovis, which means nothing to you, but it's kind of like, you know, the little town outside of Fresno at the time. And I would go in for physical checkups and that kind of thing. And he'd go, well, can't believe that this thing once, or this person here one time weighed 4 pounds, 6 ounces. Well, maybe someday she'll lose that baby fat, you know, and things like that. Well, you're 5'6", you should weigh 120 pounds, not blah, blah, whatever it was. And, you know, I was never looking back at it and looking at pictures. I wasn't fat, but I felt fat because I was put on diet pills. I didn't weigh what I was supposed to for my height. I was always one of the big kids in class, and I got teased about being fat as a kid too. And I was muscular, was what it was. Excuse me. I was very active in sports, and that's probably why I had to have both my knees replaced in the last year, but that's okay. people say, oh, you were good in sports. I go, no, I was active in sports. I fell down a lot. I love sports. That was how I felt better. I was the only girl on the all-boys baseball team, and I could whoop most of the boys in the neighborhood. I was the neighborhood, excuse me, gotta get rid of this. I was the neighborhood tomboy, and I was always active, always outside, or inside reading a book. My brother said, you're such a strange person. If you're not out terrorizing the neighborhood, you're inside reading a book. It's like, yeah. That was my escape. That's how I could not feel fat, you know. And I have a friend that I've known all my life. We literally grew up together, played together in the same playpen. She lived a few doors down. Her parents and mine were good friends. And she used to envy me because I used to get the pretty store-bought school clothes, and her mom always made theirs. And she couldn't understand why I hated my clothes. Well, what she didn't understand is I had to get in the big girls, you know, the fat girl section, as I called it. And I hated going clothes shopping. Well, first I hated dresses, but, you know, I was never comfortable in my clothes or my skin, I guess you could say. And I told her, I said, you wondered why I hated clothes shopping and why I hated my clothes. And she goes, yeah. And I said, because I couldn't shop in the girls section where all the girls got the pretty clothes and I got the, you know, little old lady type clothes. And yeah, they were nice clothes, but they weren't what I wanted. And I had falling arches, so I had to wear, you know, Oxfords with steel arches and couldn't get the Capizios shoes like everybody else in the girls were wearing. If any of you know, if you're old enough to remember what Capizios were, but that was the fad when I was growing up. And I always felt different. In dances, I was the one that didn't get asked, or, you know, if someone did, I clammed onto them kind of a thing, because relationships, you know, I didn't take boyfriends, I took hostages. it's like if a boy really showed interest in me, even if he wasn't right for me, you know, and I got into relationships that I knew were destructive. But my feeling was, well, maybe they're the last house on the block. And hey, after all, it's better than none at all. You know, a bad relationship is better than none at all. And I found out that wasn't true either. So fast forward, I got a job working. I went to college and got a Bachelor of Science degree in Recreation Administration. What does that mean? That means that my first job, I got to teach preschool in the morning and run an after-school program on a playground. And I was in tennis and, you know, tennis shoes and whistle, and I was in seventh heaven. I was working with little kids, and I could be as silly as I wanted to. My mom always told me I wouldn't grow up. And finally, I said, well, I got a job where I didn't have to. I could be just as silly as the kids, and they loved it. And I love that job. But as I went up the chain, I became a supervisor. And that's when, things started to go awry. I had a boss, after 20 years, got it in his head that I couldn't do the job. And he made it very miserable for me. And due to health reasons, I had to file a lawsuit to get out of there. First, a stress disability, and later a discrimination with some other people, because I wasn't the only one he was picking on. Long story short, I got out of there. I moved to Homer, Alaska, and lived happily ever after. But in between, to deal with it, my alcoholism took off. And so in 1989, I crashed and burned emotionally. And I went to a psychologist, and he suggested I go to AA. And I did. And eventually, June 20th, 1989 was my first sober day. And I've been sober ever since. And I always thought alcohol was my problem. Until I got to OA and realized that body image was my biggest problem. My very first sponsor, I did actually get a sponsor in Homer. They did have a group at one time, so I was lucky about that. But backing up, in sobriety, both my parents passed away, and I moved to Homer in 1995, and my mom had passed away by then, but my dad was still alive, and he'd come and visit me. Suddenly kind of drawing a blank. But I guess the thing is that my brother I still had, and we had gotten close. We fought like cats and dogs when we were young, of course, like most, you know, siblings, especially. I was the younger brat, but I was better in sports than he was. And that, in fact, one day my dad came home and there was a kid made cake. It was obvious. And he goes, oh, Jan, you baked the cake. I said, nah, I was out playing baseball. Theo baked the cake. That's the way it was. You know, I was the sports one and he was more domestic. I was funny. He got married when he was 20. And in 1979, they were in a very serious accident, and his first wife was killed. And so after that, he had two boys, and I kind of took over as surrogate mother for the boys when I could, doing things with them. Anyway, I got sober in 1989, and then I moved to Homer in 1995. And my brother self, he developed congenital heart disease and problems with his kidneys. And it was because of the pain medication that he'd been sent on since that accident, because he was seriously injured in it. And they put him on pain pills and he got addicted to them. And there was nothing I could do. You know, I tried to talk to him, but, you know, it is what it is. And So in 2020, I went down to Fresno. Well, my cousin had gone down to visit, to spend the winter with her mother. I have a cousin that lives here in Homer. That's why I live here. And her mom at that time was like 89, and she wanted to spend the winter with her. And she kind of got into helping my brother with his, because he couldn't take care of himself too well. He was in a what was supposed to be assisted living center, but it really wasn't. And so my cousin kind of did his grocery shopping and laundry and a few things like that. And I called her one day and she was telling me how bad he was getting. And I said to her, well, if I need to come down, let me know. And she said, Jan, you need to come down. So I did, and kind of walked into a buzzsaw, because that was when the pandemic was hitting and things were starting to close down. My nephew, who was a financial advisor, had been sort of taking care of my brother whenever he would start hallucinating on his medication because he accidentally overdosed himself or something. And so I became the one taking care of my brother, and that was fine. He was in the hospital. He had to go in for the 11th time to have his lungs drained. And while he was in there, I also got duty of finding a rest home for him to go to when he got out of the hospital. And so I took care of all that. And then when he could be released and went to there, then we had to move all of his stuff out of his old place. And there was a family hoo-ha over that that I won't go into. But everybody got upset over a misunderstanding, and I was the one that they yelled at because I was the one that was most convenient. So I was getting it from my nephews, my cousin, who, you know, where I was staying at their house, my cousin's house with her mom, and everybody seemed to be upset with me, and I had nothing to do with it. I was kind of caught in the middle. I was the one that was easy to lash out at. We were all stressed, we were all tired, and I was the butt of all of that. Well, then they shut down the rest home and I couldn't see my brother. So I would call him on the phone, and finally I said, you know, Dale, I can talk to you just as easily on the phone in Homer as I can in Fresno. I'm gonna go back. And when this pandemic lifts up and I can come back and see you again, I'll be back. And he said, Jan, I was going to say the same thing to you. Go home. Yeah, that's where you need to be. And I think we both knew that I'd never see him again. But we pretended like, you know, that was what we were going to do. So I got home. And back then, if you'd been out of state, you had to quarantine for 12 days or 14 days, something like that. And I thought, hot damn, a 14-day vacation. No responsibilities. I couldn't go anywhere. My food and my mail was brought to me. And what food did I ask for? Anything that tasted good. Sweet, salty, crunchy, you name it. I wanted it. And my house sitter, bless her heart, brought it to me. You know, ice cream out the hoo-ha. And it was a 12-day party. And in the process, about 4 days after I got home, my brother passed away. Well, my nephew and I reached out to him and said, you know, because I was so mad at him, I wanted to take him out of my will. He had really disrespected me, but I knew that he was under a lot of stress. His relationship was, you know, his significant other and he were breaking up. There was a trying to sell a house in a pandemic and all this kind of stuff. And I got it. You know, all his stress was taken out on me. So I just, emailed him and said, I'm sorry that your dad passed away. I know it's hard because I've lost mine. And of course, it was my brother, but his dad. And he just sent back, I know that was hard for you. Thank you. And I hope it's all water under the bridge. And I said, yes. So that's basically how we made up. But I stepped on the scale at the end of that 12 days. And I weighed more than I'd ever weighed before. And I was probably more depressed than I've ever been in my life. I had ate myself silly and, you know, it comforted me for a while, but then it quit working, just like alcohol quit working. And there happened to be an outside AA meeting going on. And so I went to it, and it was at the beach. And I sat at the beach, and I looked out at the beautiful Kenai Mountains, and I said, higher power, I don't know what to do. God help me. I don't know what to do. I went to the meeting. After the meeting, as I was leaving, I heard a friend of mine talking to another friend of mine about OA. Oh my God. I got in my car. I looked skyward and I said, thank you, higher power. I called my friend, and she could not get over to my house fast enough with pamphlets and literature. And we talked and we talked. And so I got online, because then Homer did have an OA group, and it was actually online. So I went to the meetings. I got a sponsor. And then she had to cut me loose because her lymphoma had come back. And she said, I just don't have the strength to be a sponsor anymore. And so I didn't know what to do, because the group in Homer was dwindling quickly. And so again, I called this friend that had got me into it. And I said, what do I do? And she said, there's meetings online. So eventually I got into going to meetings in Anchorage, Wasilla, and Juneau. And it saved my life. My sponsor's in Juneau. I went to a retreat for the first time. I got to go to Juneau. And best of all, I'm happier than I've ever been. You know, am I at the weight I want to be? No. What's great is that I've been on diets, you know. And I still have to get, you know, I'm not out of, I'm still in larges, but that's okay. You know, that's okay. The best part is what I have taken off has stayed off. And that's new, because I have taken 60 pounds off 3 times in my life. And I've put it back on and then some. And I've kept it off. And I've found a higher power that I feel closer to, that I know saved my life a year ago. And I'm just as happy as I can be. Am I where I want to be? No. Am I good, really good at abstinence? Yeah. You know, I vary. But I have a plan. I've been off of sugar and salt. I'm cutting back on salt, but I'm not eating chips and all of that kind of stuff. I'm off of the red foods. And I know what a red food is. I know what the triggers are. And I know that I can be as happy as I want to be. It's up to me. I have a choice. Isn't that something? That first sponsor, though, I'll end with this, gave me a little prayer that I used to say when I first started getting abstinent. Higher power, please heal the child inside of me a little more each day. Help the inner child be alive, free, and full of joy. When I first did my first step, or my first fourth step, I blamed my mom for putting me on diet pills and, you know, making, you know, she wanted me to lose weight, but yet she was born, you know, she was raised in the Depression. It was like, here, finish this off. I don't want it to go to waste. And my dad's thing was, yeah, you want it to go to my waist. And yet she wanted me to lose weight. She put me on diet pills. Then I realized, no, this was the 50s. If a doctor told you your daughter needs to be on diet pills, you'd do it. It was that damn doctor who sat there with his pot belly and suspenders and told me I was fat and made me feel fat and ugly. You know, I don't blame anybody anymore. It is what it is. I can live with it. But today, at least I'm comfortable in who I am and what I am. And that's a blessing. And I'm glad to be here. And thank you for listening.